second time ever, a 16 beats a 1.
Joining us today on the Breakfast with Ben's podcast, the man who authored that call from the Columbus Regional, the first round of the NCAA tournament on CBS, it is Andrew Catalan. You've heard him here on the podcast before talking Steelers. He does play-by-play for CBS for the NFL, for Masters coverage, which he will be on next, and of course the NCAA tournament. I was in Columbus watching that live and then was thrilled to see all the great response that people had to Andrew's game-winning call as Fairleigh Dickinson, a 16 seed, upsets a 1 seed in the Purdue Boilermakers. Andrew, it was fun for me to watch that just for the sake of being in the building when a little history was made, but I imagine it was a blast for you to call and you did a great job with it.
Well, I appreciate it, Tim. Good talking with you again. And yeah, that was a special night. I don't think either one of us will forget it. I mean, that was just, I remember the game ending and it was surreal. It was, we were trying to process as a crew what just happened. I'm sure that was probably similar, you know, for the fans in the stands like yourself. But then, you know, the teams for the next game are already warming up on the court and you had to get ready for Memphis and Florida Atlantic. So I don't think it really hit us until after that last game when we got back to our hotel and we had some pizza and hung out as a group and kind of just thought about that night. But it was really special. I think that's kind of the magic of the tournament, and we saw it on full display in Columbus.
Well, Andrew, I think the fact that you had another really tight, close, good game immediately thereafter with Memphis and FAU, that was sort of the cherry on top, and you had a great call of that game-ending drive as well. It was kind of like, sure, everybody was talking about the FDU result at the end, but I thought the Memphis-FAU contest was quite entertaining as well.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal finish. And again, you're like, part of you is like, all right, well, you know, everyone's going to be talking about this FDU game. What's this next game going to bring us? Like, how could this possibly live up to what we just saw? And I'm not comparing a 16 beating a 1 to a great finish, but that was a fantastic game, especially down the stretch. There were so many strange twists and turns with, you know, the Memphis players not getting along with each other. And, you know, Penny Hardaway rolling with DeAndre Williams, who had 4 fouls the whole second half. I mean, there's really a lot to get into in that game. And again, it's such a marathon day with the 4 games. You just never know which way things are going to turn. I could have told you, you know, maybe the day before that, oh, I think the day session will be better. You've got Michigan State against USC and Vermont, a game team against Marquette, but it was obviously the other way around with those 2 phenomenal games at night.
So when you're calling the game for the opener of the night session and Purdue comes in as a team with a reputation of constantly being very good, but constantly coming up short in the NCAA tournament, they've had upset losses in recent years, St. Peter's, Texas Southern, I believe, a couple of years ago. Are you aware of that? Were you building that up throughout the course of the broadcast? I mean, I just know from a fan's point of view, for as much as I knew about Purdue's history of struggling against lesser-seeded teams, at halftime, I'm like, okay, this is nice. They kept it close for a while. This might stay close to the second half. But especially when you consider you got a 7'4" guy out there in Edie against the smallest team in the NCAA, or at least in the NCAA tournament, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, this is going to swing towards Purdue eventually. When did you sort of allow yourself to build up to the, hey, this might happen sense?
Yeah, we had the same sense. That was kind of my feeling as well. In fact, with 1 minute to go in the first half, there was a timeout. We were in commercial. And the producer said, okay, when we come back, I'm going to roll in the UMBC UVA highlights. And I'm like, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Like, I know it's close. I know it's almost halftime. But I think that's more of like, let's get to the second half and we might have something type of flashback than with 1 minute to go in the first half. So, you know, I think we've seen that movie before when the underdog hangs around and then, you know, the big dog kind of pulls away. And that was kind of what I wanted to try to stay in the moment because I did think FDU was playing well, but I really didn't want to get too far ahead where you're getting really excited and, hey, they're only down 1 or up 1 at the break. I thought we had to get till about the 10-minute, 8-minute mark of the second half when we can really start to say, hey, this could happen. And that's kind of when the switch flipped for me. I would say about the 8-minute mark of the second half.
It's an interesting point you bring up, Andrew, because And Andrew Catalan, our guest, by the way, here on the Breakfast with Ben's podcast, talking about the Columbus region from the NCAA tournament. You know, the play-by-play that I do for ESPN Plus, you know, it's a much more limited thing than what you guys have, your giant crew and all the week's worth of preparation and, you know, one of the biggest sporting events of the year. You know, if we have an idea about when we want to roll back with something or some video or a stat, it's pretty easy for us to kick that around during a short commercial break. When you're talking to your producer, I mean, is that one of those things where the decision's already made and he's decided to come out with it? Are you consciously trying to talk him out of it? How much dialogue goes on between play-by-play guy and producer in a situation like that?
Yeah, his name is Bill Thayer, and to his credit, he's like, okay, we can wait, no problem. I mean, there's certain things that, you know, sales items that he's like, we have to do this right now.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not going to win that fight. Like, that's a fight that's above both of our heads. But he was receptive to waiting on the UMBC flashback. And even Steve Lapis, my analyst, kind of agreed with me and said, hey, let's just wait till the second half to do that. So we have a great crew. We've all known each other for so long. And, you know, I think that I'm comfortable saying things to him over talk back and vice versa. He would tell me like, hey, you got to do this differently or we're going to go here. So I think that's just, you know, when you work with someone for so long, I think that really plays a part in how the broadcast comes across.
How did you guys handle and what did you think about the lack of use of Edie down the stretch and his touches versus what Purdue was running on offense?
Yeah, it was puzzling, Tim. I mean, I just it just looked like, and I think it's true, that Purdue had never seen a team like FDU before, and they weren't really ready for it. I think that's the most simplistic way I can say it. I mean, I don't think there's a team in the Big Ten that plays like FDU. And obviously, I think Matt Painter and his staff were prepared for what they were going to, you know, expecting to see, but the execution just wasn't there. And, you know, I think that in today's college basketball world, these players are so much older than they used to be. I mean, yeah. You know, guys are 23, 24. I mean, Memphis has a 26-year-old. You know, Purdue came in with freshman guards, and I think that's a disadvantage. I know that FDU is inexperienced and short, and half their starters are from D2, but they're older. They've been in NCAA tournament games before, even though it was Division II, and I think that in today's world, you need experience in the NCAA tournament, and Purdue did not have a lot of that, especially in the backcourt.
For you, you're a Jersey guy. How fun was that to call that result?
Well, I can't tell you that growing up in New Jersey, I was a huge FDU fan. I mean, so that's
right. Yeah.
But my father got his master's from FDU, so that was kind of neat. And it was nice because I know where they are. I know the roads. I know, you know, just what it means. I know how hard it is for a team like FDU to get media attention in this area because you're competing against the Yankees and the Rangers and the Giants and the Jets. So it's not a team that gets a lot of headlines or even a lot of coverage. So it was important to me. Obviously, they're on the big stage there, even before they were pulling off the upset, to give the viewers something about the school, the area, the stories, and then obviously it became the ultimate story.
Now, the reality is that you get to Madison Square Garden for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, and the one seed isn't there. FAU is Florida Atlantic because they beat FDU the night thereafter, two nights thereafter, I should say, in the round of 32. And the bracket moves on, and it's one of those things, Andrew, I guess, where, you know, you love the upsets in the moment, but then you get a couple rounds later, and you're like, hey, where are the big dogs? But, like, to your point, that's probably going to happen a lot more as college basketball keeps going down this path where the good players get to become very good because they stay longer, and the superstar players, or at least the superstar talents, have to have it manifest in the first year or two, or they're gone to the NBA or playing overseas, and you know, some of the big-name schools have lots of talent, but maybe not the refinement and polish that some of the mid-conference or small-conference teams have.
Yeah, I totally agree, Tim. And, you know, there wasn't a dominant team in college basketball this whole year. I mean, I think you heard people say in January and February, like, hey, 25, 30 teams might be able to win this thing this year. And we've seen a little bit of that play out where I think you can make a case for almost all of the teams left in the Sweet 16. You know, I thought Shaka Smart told me something really interesting earlier in the season when I had one of his games. You know, he said he worked a lot on culture and making his team become very connected and close off the court. And obviously he thought that would help them playing basketball. But now with the way kids transfer out of schools, he thought that if he could develop these kids into being really good friends, they had a better chance to stay longer. And I think that was, you know, I don't think that's something you really thought about a few years ago. But now with the way the transfer portal works and so much turnover and roster turnover and changes, I think it was really smart. Now, I know they didn't make it to the Sweet 16, but I think it's really smart of Shaka to really try to get this thing to be built up over years. And then maybe that helps them, you know, down the stretch. But I think it's wide open. I think you can make case for a lot of these teams. And I think that we're in for another surprise or two before it's all said and done.
How cool is the NCAA tournament in Madison Square Garden?
Ah, that's awesome. I mean, it's the, you know, it's the Mecca. You could use all the cliches, the world's most famous arena. But I think, you know, I think we're going to see that next year with Rick Pitino at St. John's. I think that you're going to feel that buzz back in the garden for college basketball, but it's going to start this week with Michigan State. I mean, as you saw, they were well represented in Columbus, and I think they'll have a big contingent in New York for the Sweet 16.
To that point, do you think they emerge from this bracket? Do you like Tennessee? Do you like Kansas State? What are FAU's chances? Who comes out from it, do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think that if Michigan State can play defense like they did the first two games, they've got a really good chance to emerge. But I'm really impressed with Tennessee. I mean, I didn't think that they were going to get by Duke in that second round game, and they, I thought, handled them really well. That's, you know, they're down their best player who got hurt, but they've found out a way to figure it out without him. So I think a lot depends on that Michigan State defense. That's what Tom Izzo told us. He said, we don't have our most talented team ever, but we're pretty well connected. And if we play defense, we can make a run, and they are right now. So I think that's a really going to be a fun one in New York. I don't think Florida Atlantic can get by Tennessee, but you never know. I mean, I don't think they're going to be intimidated either. They're very well coached by Dusty May.
Andrew Catalan with us. Andrew, what's up next? The Masters for you, right? This is your third time in the main course?
Yeah, looking forward to that. A couple weeks away. It should be a great event this year, and that's always a fun week for us to go down there and get in golf mode. So I'm excited for it.
Looking ahead to the NFL at all, I'm sure you'll have a Steeler game or two. Actually, wait, this year's different, right? Isn't this the first year it's not designated for CBS and Fox?
Yeah, I think they are making a few changes. I don't know all the specifics to that. I think we'll still see a good number of AFC games, but there could be a few more changes from what I hear. Again, I don't know anything specific. But, yeah, I would love to get the Steelers. I haven't had them that much, as you know. I had them once last year.
Yeah, I think we talked in advance of the Falcons game, right?
Yeah, exactly, when they played the Falcons. But I love talking to Mike Tomlin. I think he is excellent, and it would be great to have a few more of those games down the road. There's very few NFL stadiums I haven't called a game in yet, but Pittsburgh is one of them. I've never done a game there, which is crazy.
Even when you were at Syracuse, you didn't come to Acrisure Stadium when Pitt played SU ever?
I went there. It was before the field was built. When was that field built?
2001. When did you graduate?
Yeah. So I graduated in 2001. So when I went there for a Pitt game, it was still the old place.
I don't know why. I thought you were a little bit younger than that. I thought you were like graduated in 2003 when Melo won the championship. I don't know why I had that in my head.
I was already done. Yeah, 2001 was my last year. So, yeah, I got to get back there. I haven't had a Primanti Brothers sandwich in a long time.
Well, Andrew, thanks so much for the time. Greatly appreciate it. And if we don't talk this year before a game at Acrisure Stadium, we'll talk again in advance of March Madness next year when Adrian Autry has the Orange back in the Final Four. Okay?
I love it, Tim. Thanks so much.
Andrew Catalan has been our guest here on the Breakfast with Benz podcast. Check him out. CBS Masters coverage in a couple weeks. And keep watching the NCAA tournament on CBS.